So we're going to be reading from John chapter 10 this morning, and the first 10 verses. It's on page 1086, if you want to follow in your church Bibles. I tell you the truth, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of his sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all of his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus used this figure of speech, but they did not understand what he was telling them. Therefore, Jesus said again, "I tell you the truth, I am the gate for the sheep. All who ever came before me were thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the gate. All who enter through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and to kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." When I was preparing for this weekend, I got to about Wednesday and I sent off the order of service and I sent to Jay the order of the songs and to Pete. And then I realised the following day, I was preaching on the wrong topic. I'd skipped this third of the I am sayings of Jesus, I am the gate, and I jumped into I am the good shepherd. And I suddenly realise it's halfway through the week, I'm preparing for the wrong week. And I think we often, when we read this passage, it's a familiar passage to many of us. And we're familiar with the image of Jesus as a good shepherd. Jesus as the shepherd. We sing, "The Lord is my shepherd." It's a familiar biblical image of God as shepherd. And we often kind of overlook or forget about this slightly odd saying of Jesus, "I am the gate." It kind of lacks the poetry and the power of the ones we've already covered. "I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world." Quite poetic. "I'm the gate." It's not quite got the same sort of ring to it, has it? You think, was he having a day off there? He could have maybe jazzed up that phrase a little bit more. But as we're going to find out, this saying is no less important than the ones that came before, or indeed next week's "I am the good shepherd." So exploring its meaning is going to be our focus this morning. Now, if you've missed the last couple of weeks, then just a quick recap. What we're looking to do with these Sunday mornings over the next several weeks is to try and better understand who Jesus is by looking at what he says about himself. And this is this, what we're focusing on, is these series of seven statements in John's Gospel that Jesus makes, and they all begin with the phrase, "I am." And the word "I am" invokes the name of God. This is what God calls himself in the Old Testament, "I am who I am." And so immediately when Jesus is using this phrase, "I am," he's claiming to be God. And then the second part of the sentence explores in more detail what that means. "I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the gate." And so today's passage incorporates, if we kind of carry it on, because it doesn't naturally stop where I stopped the reading this morning, it carries on further, and it incorporates the fourth saying, "I am the good shepherd." And to understand both of these, we need to have a bit of a background, understanding and context on what shepherding was like and how shepherds operated in the Middle East in the time of Jesus. which is kind of a bit of an abstract thing to think about. Not the sort of thing I'm sure you read up in your spare time, kind of shepherding skills 2,000 years ago. But just briefly, this would have been a very common picture or image for Jesus to use at the time. The people listening to him, the crowd, were familiar with shepherds, with who they were, what they were like, what they did, how they operated. Us in 2019, I don't know if anyone got any friends who were shepherds? No, even in Norfolk, we can't drum up a shepherd between us. It's not a common vocation. I don't think when you're at school these days and you kind of have to do the little assessment where you answer a load of questions, they put it into an algorithm on the computer and it tells you what you should do when you're older, and it's always something really rubbish or random. Oh yeah, you should be a dustman, and you think, oh, right, okay, I said I wanted to be outdoors and you've given me a dustman. Right, okay, I was thinking, well, you know, I don't know, something else. Anyway, we don't really know what shepherds are like. But they would have done 2,000 years ago. And Jesus begins by talking about entering the sheep pen by the gate. Now, the sheep pen would have been normally near to a house, and it would have consisted of a stone wall, usually topped by sharp thorn branches. So I've got a picture here for you. This is sort of the remnants of a sheep pen. So the thorn branches have obviously disappeared over the years. And so the sheep would have gone in here, and you've got the stone wall around it. There would have been some sharp branches so that people couldn't climb over the wall. And there's one way in and one way out. One sheep-sized gate. And some of the sheep pens would have had a physical gate or barrier. Some would have just been open like that, and simply the gatekeeper would have sat in between, stopping the sheep from getting out and stopping anyone else from getting in. The shepherd would normally have kind of a helper. It had been the gatekeeper, and Jesus refers to the gatekeeper as opposed to the shepherd later on in our text. Normally, you could have the sheep of a few families all gathered together in a pen. So that doesn't look like a particularly huge one, but sometimes you could have large pens with three or four different families worth of flocks all together. And in the morning, the shepherd would come and he would take his sheep and take them out into the fields. And so the way that they would do that is they would call the sheep by name. Steve? Dave? Come on, 6 o'clock, get up. And the sheep would listen to the shepherd and they would come out. We need to understand that at the time, in the day, shepherds were disgusting. They were vulgar, they were dirty, they were sort of considered the lowest of the low. So you didn't normally hang around with shepherds, sort of, you know, unless you had a real need to, unless it was family. And so people wouldn't be going to the sheep unless it was the shepherd or unless they were trying to steal the sheep. That's the only way you'd go and engage with the sheep in the sheep pen. And so verse 2 says, the only one who enters the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. So we know that some random person isn't going to come and just sort of check out, oh, there's some sheep over there, I'm going to go and have a look. The shepherd of the sheep comes to the gate, no one else. And verse 3 says, the sheep hear the shepherd's voice and he leads them out. And the sheep follow him because they recognize him. They don't follow a stranger. Now in the Western world, if we went to Wales or somewhere and you saw plenty of sheep out on a field being shepherded and herded, normally the shepherd would get behind them, maybe use a sheepdog and kind of herd the sheep. But in the Middle East, now just as back then in Jesus' time, the shepherds would lead their flocks by beckoning them, would be in front of them rather than behind them, come forward, follow me. There's evidence that the shepherds would actually give nicknames to their sheep. So I joke about, oh, Dave, Steve, come on, let's go. But actually, they would give their sheep names. It wasn't always just a generic call or whistle that they recognised as being from the shepherd. They would use that to sort of move the whole flock, but to get them out in the mornings, they would. Sometimes they called them, use their nicknames. Call their sheep by name. By painting this picture, Jesus is evoking the common Old Testament metaphor of God as Israel's shepherd. David was a shepherd before he became king. And the promised Messiah is described as God's shepherd. So Jesus is setting himself out as being this long-awaited shepherd who would lead and protect God's people. And just as a sheep, helpless and in need of guidance, can still detect the difference between the shepherd's voice and the stranger's voice, Jesus is saying that this is the same kind of intimate relationship that he wants to cultivate with each of his followers. He's going to call you by name. He knows your name. And you can hear his voice because you know him. You recognize him and you follow. I'm sure most of you have heard this before, or a similar sort of analogy before. But recognizing someone's voice is a sign that you know that person. And before he changed jobs moved out of London, my brother would occasionally call me from work, mainly because he was doing nothing and wasting time. And it was a good way of procrastinating, I think. Although he used to tell me that, well, I've done all my work already, so I've got nothing else to do. But occasionally he'd ring me, and he'd ring me from his work phone. And so I didn't have it saved on my mobile. And so it would just come up with this random number, like a London number, just like the sort of numbers you'd get from PPI or from those sort of annoying claims people. Oh, I've heard about your accident. What accident? So normally I'd answer the phone quite reluctantly. Normally I wait for that pause where it kind of connects you to the call centre, and that's the point where I just hang up. But instead I'd hear my brother's voice. What? Immediately I'd know who it was. This wasn't an annoying call centre. It's an annoying brother. When you know someone, you don't need to explain who you are on the phone. He doesn't ring out and go, "Hi, this is Neil Timothy. How are you?" Person recognises your voice. That familiarity, that bond, is the kind of bond that Jesus has with his followers. He knows them by name. And as we become closer to him, we recognise his voice. Now, at this point, I'm kind of aware I'm starting to stray into shepherd territory, and I don't want to nickel my material from next week. So let's move down onto this passage where Jesus says, "I am the gate." Because the first six verses of John chapter 10 are a bit of an introduction here, and the crowd haven't understood what Jesus is saying. So he says in verse 7, "I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep." Now I think the big question for me at this point is, if Jesus is a gate, what is he a gate from and a gate to? If you have a gate in your front garden, you know that entering it takes you from the outside world to your home. But if Jesus is a gate, where are we going from and where are we going to if we open it and go through it? Well, the simple answer is that we're coming from a world away from God to a world with God. That's the simple answer. Notice Jesus says, "I am the gate," not "I am a gate." I'm the gate. Verse 9, he says, "Whoever comes by me will be saved and will come in and go out and find pasture." In other words, Jesus is saying that by coming through him, he is the entrance point, the only entrance point to everlasting life with God. That he will save us from a life that ends with death, to a life that finds lasting fulfillment. But more than that, Jesus is saying that he is the gate not just to a future salvation or to something kind of a heavenly, eternal, far off in the distance, but to a better life now. This isn't simply about eternity or going to heaven. This is about your life in the here and now and whether you are able to lead a fulfilled life. One of the translations of verse 10 says, "I came that they may have life and have it in abundance." Abundance. This is an overflow of life in all its goodness, the best of life. Accessed only through Jesus. But once they're accessed, we can enjoy them in abundance. Not just the bare minimum. The reason for this is because Jesus is the gate that grants us access to God. Now, in a couple of weeks, we're going to look at this in more detail when we look at John 14. And Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And no one comes to the Father except through me. Jesus is the gateway to accessing God the Father. There is no other way that we can encounter God, that we can build a relationship with God, that we can even begin to get our heads around God, unless it's through Jesus. So Jesus provides a gateway to God the Father. And the reason that this is good news, the reason this is worth getting excited about, is because God's heart is for you to enjoy an abundance of life in all its goodness. For you to realize the fullness of life. Now, quite a few of you were there yesterday at our away day. And in one of our sessions, I shared a quote from a theologian called Walter Brueggemann. And he says that the whole story of the Bible is about God's will for us to find wholeness through relationship with Jesus. But that's the whole point, the whole overarching story and purpose behind the Bible is that God desires us to find a wholeness, a fullness of life through relationship with his son Jesus. The antidote to our brokenness, to our insecurities, our fears, our failings, is to know God through knowing Jesus. When Jesus talks about protecting his people from the thieves and the robbers and the bandits who come to steal and destroy and to kill, he's talking about providing a life that gives security, that gives safety. In other words, a life without fear. Think back to the sheep pen. The sheep pen keep the sheep safe at night. It meant that they could sleep without fear. It meant that the shepherd could sleep without fear because he knew the sheep were safe. A close relationship with Jesus brings about a sense of safety. Now, you might not think that this is especially important to you. It's sort of the typical kind of masculine macho man. Well, I'm all right, I can look after myself. But this is life-changing news. Because in providing safety and security, Jesus is combating one of the deepest, most destructive human emotions that all of us face at some point in life. Fear. Now I say deep-rooted because fear is ingrained into the human experience. Fear is a direct consequence of the broken human condition. When we go all the way back to Adam and Eve in the very beginning of the Bible, you look right at the beginning at chapter 3, after Adam and Eve have chosen to disobey God and sin enters the world, the first thing that we read that sin does is it causes us to fear. Genesis 3, Adam says to God, I heard the sound of you in the garden and I was afraid because I was naked. There's no sense of fear before that point where sin comes into the world, before we disobeyed God. I said it yesterday and I'll say it again. You cannot enjoy a wholeness of life, the fullness of life, if fear is present. Fear works to undermine that. With the exception of a fear of God, fear is almost always a corrosive emotion. And it normally hides away under the surface, kind of bubbling away, usually undetected, until it wants to strike. And I'm not just talking about a fear of spiders or of flying or of going out in a dodgy part of town on a Saturday night. I'm talking about the deeper rooted fears that we harbour. The fears that maybe we don't think about at all or pretend to kind of put to the back of our minds and ignore. A fear of being alone. A fear of being unloved. A fear that our lives haven't meant something. Fear of failure. These emotions are not God-given. They exist to undermine our self-confidence, to stop us from knowing the fullness of life that God desires. When Jesus says, "I am the gate," he's saying that relationship with him is a relationship which provides security and safety. Think about the strongest relationships that we enjoy in life. A healthy marriage, for example, has at its core a sense of security provided by each person for the other. Now, Claire doesn't make me feel safe because I know that if someone breaks in the middle of the night, she's going to leap out of bed, run down the stairs and sort of lay a crushing uppercut and floor the would-be intruder. I mean, I'd pay to see that, but I just can't imagine that happening. That's not what gives me security and helps me to sleep at night. But she does provide security for me because she's made me know that I am loved unconditionally. There is an emotional security that she gives me. Hopefully I give her. Many of you know that feeling of being in a relationship where you don't feel secure, where you're not 100% sure of what the other person is thinking or feeling towards you. It's a horrible feeling. It's so disruptive and it becomes all consuming. It has the power to mess with your minds. Whether we realize it or not, we crave security in our relationships and we thrive as people when we do have it. That's why marriage, by the way, is so important and is not the same as simply being with someone in a long-term relationship, because it's the strongest commitment that you can make to another person. It's saying, I'm all in on this relationship. I'm not leaving wiggle room. I want this relationship, and it creates security. I think for those that are not married, there's lots of us here that aren't, I think often you find that single people develop a certain resilience as a coping mechanism. And I don't mean that as a criticism at all, by the way. But even still, you find single people often have really strong, close friendships, close relationships with a sibling or another family member, relationships that offer that security. When Jesus says, I am the gate, he's saying that on the other side is security, is safety, is an abundance of life. That's how powerful a relationship with Jesus can be, should be. And so here we sit, like sheep in a field. And Jesus knows your name. He speaks to you in a familiar way. If you like being called something different to your first name, and you often find this, why is this older generation like to call themselves different names to what they were given at birth? An example: Stanley was not Stanley, was it? Marilyn. It was. What was his name? Walter. That's right. Walter Bean. Who knows Walter Bean? Stanley Bean. Everyone knew Stanley was. Jesus called him Stanley, not Walter. There's a familiarity. If you like to be called Pete instead of Peter, Jesus will dress you as Pete. When night draws in, when times get tough in life, he shepherds you into the sheep pen and provides security for you. He watches over you. He sees you through that tough time, that dark time. And when those times pass, he leads you back out again into green pastures where we can enjoy the fullness of life. Jesus is the gate to this, the gate to life with God. Our role is to hear his voice, to learn what it sounds like, and to dare to trust and follow him completely. Amen. Let's pray together.